Welcome back into Morning Drive, fourth and final hour off and running here on this Tuesday edition, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live this morning from Barrel House, Bridgestone Arena. Predators and the Maple Leafs tonight. We'll talk some Preds with Chris Mason, bottom of the hour. But just about 20 minutes ago, both Braden and I were scrolling through our Twitter feed, and we both simultaneously saw some college football lines that have been posted for this upcoming season, and we both looked at each other, smiling like kids at a candy store. So, Constable, if you don't mind, let's mention a couple of these more notable games, and then we'll get into some college football discussion.
Well, we'll start with August 24th to open things up. Florida is an 8.5-point favorite versus Miami.
Lay the points, take the Gators. Miami's got a lot of questions.
You love your boy Mullen this year, just like you did last year, right?
Yeah, what did I tell you guys last year? Nine or ten wins. What'd they do?
Do you think they're winning the East?
No. But I think – so we'll get into this, but I think there's Alabama, and then there are three teams on the next tier in the SEC this year, and everybody else. There are four teams that can win the title not named Alabama – or three teams that can win the title not named Alabama. So we'll get to them as we get – work through these games.
Okay.
Speaking of Florida, an early line versus Tennessee, 14.5.
So I'm assuming that game is in the swamp.
That tells you everything you need to know about Vegas' perception of the two coaching staffs and where their rosters are.
Hard to disagree.
I mean, that
after what they did here in Knoxville last year?
Yeah. Well, now the thing is Tennessee probably would have been in that game had there not been, what, six turnovers?
Yeah.
Which is a very weird – it's an anomaly to have six turnovers in a game. That game is traditionally significantly closer than any blowout like that. I actually like Tennessee with the points in that one, but let me see how everybody plays in the first couple of weeks because that's a huge game for Tennessee early because their schedule is – they should be 3-0 going to Gainesville.
And that is, what, week three?
September 21st.
I think that's week four.
What's the line again?
It's 14.5 is a lot of points for those two teams.
I'll get back to that day in just a second, but going back to August 31st, I thought this one was interesting. Auburn is a 3-point favorite versus Oregon.
Neutral site, right? Dallas?
Oregon, they've got Justin Herbert back. They're really salty. Auburn, we don't really know what Auburn's going to be because of the offense, the offensive line and the quarterback. I'm going to take an SEC team like Auburn to win the line of scrimmage battle against a team like Oregon, so I would lay the points. But Oregon is a very dangerous outside. They're a potential playoff contender if their line of scrimmage is good because they got their quarterback back. They could be the front runner in the Pac-12. So that could be very similar to what we saw last year, which was Auburn and Washington playing in the first week.
What about also on September 21st, Georgia, an 11.5-point favorite against Notre Dame?
I just don't –
So that's the return game in Athens, I believe, correct?
Is it neutral or is it in Athens? I'm not sure. But
I don't know. This just says
I think it was in South Bend last year.
It's not in Notre Dame. It was 2 years ago, but it's not in Notre Dame. So that was for sure. Georgia is a very, very good football team. So I think Notre Dame is going to lose a lot of guys. I would take Georgia in that one.
You're concerned, though, about Georgia, though? I mean, with the Fromm back, but he loses basically all of his skill players.
Yeah, skill players aren't where you win championships. You win championships in the trenches, and they have recruited at an ungodly Alabama level of talent in the front on their offensive line and their defensive line. So I would expect Georgia is probably a top-five team in the preseason again.
Moving into October, LSU is a 3.5-point favorite against Florida.
That's in Baton Rouge?
Yes.
I take the points.
I kind of like Florida.
Give me the points for sure. Give me Florida. Although
less miles. Ed Orgeron, 2-year extension yesterday.
Well, that's good for the program.
Dirty football.
Yeah, because Joe Oliva's all of his decisions are great right now.
Well, I mean,
LSU fans hate that guy.
I mean, he has, you know, people didn't think that he would have done what they were able to do this season.
I think he's earned it.
I think he's earned it.
Oh, no,
he's done a good job with that program That was his second year last year.
Yeah, I will brag about having nailed Florida and South Carolina. I thought South Carolina was overrated last year. I thought Florida was underrated. I was dead wrong about LSU. I thought LSU was going to be in the 7-5, 8-4 range.
I had him getting fired after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and he wasn't that much better. I mean, frankly, I think they won 9 games. The early wins for LSU last year skewed because the win over – The wins that they had ended up not looking as good, right? They beat a Miami team everyone thought was top 10. Well, it turns out Miami sucked last year. So there's still questions about his upside, And unfortunately, I think Texas A&M has leapfrogged them. I think Texas A&M has passed them in the hierarchy of the SEC West right now.
So this, of all the lines that are listed, LSU is a 7-point favorite at Texas. Earlier,
that is an awesome football game.
Early in the year, I mentioned the 3.5-point favorite against Florida. They're a 7.5-point favorite versus Auburn, a 17-point dog to Alabama.
Good God. So you said they're 7-point favorite over Texas?
Yes.
In Darrell K. Royal Stadium in Austin?
Yes.
Give me Texas and the points there. Give me Tom Herman.
I think Texas wins the Big 12 this year.
I wouldn't be that surprised.
I don't think Alabama beats them by 17 points.
They're at home.
Last couple of years have been a little bit of a
been a battle.
They've stretched it out.
No, but what I'm saying is it started off, but then Alabama eventually kind of.
It's always a battle, but then Alabama, you know, they're at home. That's still a lot of points. First of all, you should not be gambling on week 11 games in March because so many things are going to happen. Like if Tua is not playing in that game because he gets hurt, that's a very different point spread. So if you get LSU plus 17 today.
And they don't have Jalen anymore.
And maybe you hedge when the game comes around. It's just there's so many things that could change between now.
Georgia, a couple of lines for Georgia. They're a 4-point favorite versus Florida in Jacksonville. They're a 9-point favorite at Auburn, and then a 15.5-point favorite against Texas A&M.
Now, there's the team that you should have brought up earlier. Alabama's a 13-point favorite at Texas A&M. That will be to Alabama's toughest game of the entire schedule. Alabama's toughest test all year will be a road trip to the Aggies. I think Texas A&M is maybe the second-best team in the SEC. I probably would lean Georgia right now. But Texas A&M, they've got their quarterback back, Jimbo Fisher. They got the best defensive coordinator maybe in the entire conference. That Texas A&M team was different last year under Jimbo Fisher than it was under Kevin Sumlin.
Just ask Clemson.
That team, they're a 21-point favorite at Clemson. That tells you how much love there is for Clemson right now. That game will be, I think, week two. So Texas A&M has a tough schedule, but these two games right here, A&M plus 13 at home against Alabama, give me A&M. A&M plus 15.5 against Georgia, give me A&M in both of those. A&M is going to be very good this
year. So you're as high as on A&M this year as you were Florida last year?
Probably. The schedule for Florida last year was a big part of why I thought they would bounce back quickly. The schedule is very tough for A&M, so I don't think anyone should pick them to win the championship. I think they're almost guaranteed two losses, if not three. But they will be a 9 or 10 win-ish type of team. And I'm just – if you're telling me what is Alabama's toughest test this year, because they're clearly a heavy favorite to win every game and win the SEC again, the toughest game they'll play outside of Georgia in the SEC championship game will be Texas A&M on the road. That is their toughest game of the year. A&M is a very good football team.
And then finally, Nick, you will enjoy this. Alabama, 2-touchdown favorite at Auburn in the Iron Bowl.
On the road.
Yep.
Mm. That will also be a tough game.
Yeah, I don't like laying those kind of points in that game on the road.
It's just too. It's always Auburn. Here's the thing with Auburn. It's the same as every year with Auburn. We have no clue. It's just.
Well, I don't think you really have a clue with anybody right now.
Well, I would. I think I feel pretty good about Kentucky taking a step back. I feel pretty good about Florida and Georgia being pretty good. I feel pretty good about A&M and Alabama. Auburn is a team that every single year they could win the whole thing or they could go 0-8. They're the only program where you just like – you throw your hands up and you go, I have no idea. Just let's see what happens. Now, all of a sudden a junior college cornerback turns into a quarterback and they go to the national championship game. Nick Marshall, I mean, who saw that coming? Like, and then, you know, they win a title with Cam Newton and then they go 0-8 2 years later. Like, it's just
– no, they're the most volatile stock in college football.
It's impossible to predict. They're a preseason playoff team when they had Jeremy Johnson being touted as a Heisman Trophy candidate. He didn't even finish the season as a starter that year, a couple years ago.
The fact that Auburn and LSU can by and large be a successful program for the last decade with the ups and downs at quarterback. I mean, do these programs ever figure – like, when will LSU ever figure out the quarterback position?
Yeah, I don't think you can compare them from a quarterback standpoint. I think Auburn's had great quarterback play for the most part of the last decade, and LSU's had none. So I mean, if you, Cam Newton is on that list for a year,
but they never recruit a quarterback and it's always a transfer.
That part
Stidham, Marshall, and Newton were all transfers.
All
right?
Transfers. Yep, that part is correct, and that could change this year. They've got a couple of guys that they've got a true freshman in or a sophomore in the Gatewood kid. We don't know what's going to happen with Auburn's quarterback. Again, Auburn is just you're just throwing darts with Auburn. Like they have good players. They've got a good coach. Are the fans going to lose their mind? Are they going to do some crazy nonsense? Is the offensive line going to get better? Auburn is the one program where you just go, I have no idea.
You are spot on about Bama. I'm looking at the schedule. I mean, they go to College Station. They go to Williams-Brice.
It's not scary.
They go to Jordan-Hare. I mean,
Jordan-Hare is a tough place to play because of the rivalry.
You're right. A&M, October 12th will be the toughest one.
A&M is going to do some damage. They are a very good football team. So here's my tiers. Bama on their own tier. Second tier is Georgia, A&M, and Florida. I think those are the only three other teams that could compete for an SEC championship. LSU and Auburn are sort of wild cards, right? Nobody else in the East. Missouri can't go to a bowl game, even though they might be the third best team. I'm not sure what to make of South Carolina or Tennessee. Kentucky's losing everybody to the NFL draft. Vandy's losing a lot, but still could be pretty interesting on offense if Riley Neal figures it out at quarterback. They got to replace their coordinator, too. There's just a lot of question marks in the East right now after Florida and Georgia. I think they're even further ahead of the pack than they were last year.
Speaking of Missouri, real quickly, do you guys feel bad that Kelly Bryant leaves Clemson, Trevor Lawrence thing, goes to Missouri, and now that program he transfers to, not bowl eligible?
I mean,
he didn't he didn't go. I don't think Kelly Bryant – I mean, it's nice. It would have been nice if they were eligible to go to a bowl game, but he didn't go there so he can win a national championship.
He went to start.
Yeah, he went to start and further his – you know, ability to possibly be a quarterback in the NFL. Well, he didn't go there to win a national championship.
And multiple coaches have developed multiple players to go to the NFL.
Exactly.
You've got a guy that was just here for the Titans in Blaine Gabbert. You got Chase Daniel, and now you're going to have Drew Locke. Missouri has shown that they can develop NFL players.
Exactly.
They're not great NFL players. Kelly Bryant doesn't look like an NFL quarterback to me, but the offense has been very kind to quarterbacks.
Quarterback-friendly.
Yeah, and so he's going to go there. He's going to start. He's going to put up numbers. I think they're probably the third best team in the East. I think they could win 7 or 8 games again. They're just not eligible, and I don't think they can catch Florida, and I don't think they can catch Georgia.
Chris Mason will join us at the bottom of the hour, but coming up next, we will get back to the Predators news of the day yesterday as well as the game tonight. It's Morning Drive live here on a Tuesday on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Guys.
Major breaking news, major developments here on Morning Drive. We have just been provided Dunkin' Donuts. We have donuts.
Free!
We have coffee. The heck with the rest of the show.
We're living a lie.
Chaser, can you put a couple creams in there and hand that over to me?
What do we got there?
Stir it up a little bit, too.
So we've got glazed, we've got chocolate, we've got chocolate sprinkles.
Blueberry cake donut, number one seed. Number one seed.
We've got the French cruller.
Hey, we just doing a darn thing right now.
Dude, blueberry cake donut is the best donut ever made.
Derek Mason literally just took 3 donuts.
Yeah.
You will be diabetic by
diabetes.
The big finish.
Absolutely, and I got to go work it all off.
The constable's working on a donut already.
I was working on my 2 abs.
He's mowing
for the summer.
Mowing
this
through
is going to put me back.
Chase is going after this donut like he has a date with the electric chair.
Come on, man. Now, what are we doing out there, man?
Nah.
Good Lord. All right, Chris.
Yeah, how am I supposed to focus on anything now?
Exactly. So from Dunkin' Donuts to the Nashville Predators, Chris Mason will join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll get back to some of the Kyle Turris discussion as well, but the big news yesterday was the reinstatement of Predators forward Austin Watson, who has played a total of 34 games this year. Apparently, according to Adam Vingan as well as other Preds reporters, it is expected that he would be at morning skate this morning. We'll see how that plays out in the coming hours. But no guarantee that he will be returning to the ice anytime soon for game action. So the question is, now moving forward, what impact, if any, would Austin Watson have if he makes a return in the final handful games of the regular season, and then most importantly, for the Stanley Cup playoffs?
I don't know if he will have much impact. Again, because he's been out so long, he has to work himself into game shape, because to me there is a difference between being in condition but being in condition to play a game, whether it be hockey or football or basketball. So first you gotta, you know, get him back into the fold of things, and then you gotta get him in condition and up to speed with everyone else, and then possibly put him back on ice. Me personally, I don't think that he would help this team in any capacity moving forward because of the whole condition thing. Now, if he's been out there, you know, working his tail off and trying to condition his body in such a way that he can come back, that's a different story. But yet still, he needs some time because it's not like any other sport where you get in between playoff games. You get a day. You mean you get a whole week to kind of work yourself back into it. They're back
There's very
at
little
it.
Practice
yeah,
time.
Yeah, back at it. You know, after they play a game, get two nights off, and they're back at it. So it's going
to
be tough.
I think you raise a lot of good points about the hurdles he's going to have to clear. Again, we're not talking about all the personal stuff. That's all stuff that's a different topic. But just with the team on the ice, what kind of impact does he have? I think you're right about all the stuff you're saying. He needs to be with the team for a week, week and a half. He probably needs to play at least two or three games in the regular season to get up to game speed for the playoffs. But I think you're underselling his impact on the team. I think if he's in shape and they get him up to speed, a guy who can score around the net, who's physical, who brings an edge to this team, I think there's absolutely a place for him. He creates great depth and matchups that they can mix and match if they need to. I still think there's a chance that he's just not going to play at all.
Would he then
at any point
the potential chemistry that either you have or you're starting to build with the guys on the ice already?
Because I think he's been a part of this team for so long, I think that that's not a problem. Uh-huh. Now the new guys, I don't think you put them on a line with Granlund and Simmons or whatever. Or, you know, maybe Boyle. He's going to have to learn how to play with. But I mean, if he's playing on the fourth line, or if he's playing with Bonino or Jonkruk, like he's played with all these guys before, so I don't think it takes. I'm with you. I'm more worried about the physical conditioning. If he's been training every day, which I would assume he has been, you know, it probably takes him, you know, a week of skating with the team and practicing, and then, you know, a couple of games to get up to speed. But he could absolutely make an impact on this team in the postseason. We saw him score in the postseason. He's a guy that can get around the net and get into the dirty areas and make plays. All the other stuff, the can he overcome his addiction problem. You know, all the personal stuff, that's a totally different topic and a different discussion and one that's worthy of being had. It's just a very different conversation. But I absolutely think the Predators with Austin Watson are better than the Predators without him. How much better? Is he going to win him a playoff series? Probably not. I mean, he's not worth that much, but he's certainly an added piece. It's like recruiting. It's always better to land the recruit than not land the recruit.
Okay, if he gets back on the ice, do the Predators need to make a roster adjustment with him returning?
You are past the trade deadline, so that means you don't have to worry about roster limits and things like that. So
it's just an addition. There's no subtraction.
Yeah. So they could.
Well, if you put him in the lineup, you have to take somebody out.
You have to take somebody out of that. But, I mean, from a roster standpoint, right. I mean, it's fine.
It gives Lavi flexibility.
Yeah. Look, he scored 7 goals in his 34 games, which is a pretty good clip considering he had 14 all of last year. I think if you can recreate some of that, that's obviously a guy that's going to help you from a third, fourth line. He's a great penalty killer. You know, I think Ryan called in earlier and was talking about that a little bit. If you put him with Brian Boyle and we go back to the moves that they made at the trade deadline, that if Watson had been available, what moves would they have made or not made? It's a good depth piece to have now. We don't know what's going to happen. It's an optional skate today. So I assume he's, you know, if he's on the ice, I mean, he'll be on the ice. But we just have to wait and see what Peter Laviolette wants to do from a personnel standpoint and, you know, what Austin still has to do from a personal standpoint in trying to get better.
Do you want to take another bite of that donut?
Yeah.
He's doing that, though, quickly, I'm sorry. Star center fielder Mike Trout and the Los Angeles Angels are finalizing a record-breaking 12-year contract worth more than $430 million.
Take
by
that,
my
Bryce
math,
Harper.
That is $35.83 million per year.
So the thing about the Bryce Harper deal, real quickly, it was number one in MLB history in total money and number one in MLB history in total years, right? 13 years, 300-something million. It was not number one in annual salary. He was like 13th in annual salary. So this sounds like it's going to put Trout at number like 1-1-1 at all three of those categories, unless 12 is less than 13.
Largest contract in MLB history kind of tells me that would be number one. So,
well, again, it's all about how you.
Yeah.
Bryce Harper's is the largest contract in MLB history. It's not the largest per year.
If you are a little kid growing up right now, you have to play baseball over basketball and football.
Yes.
I mean, if you could play, be a professional athlete, why would you not pick? With,
look,
and
dude,
this is monopoly
dude,
money they're throwing around.
Left-handed relievers that throw two innings a week are making $8 million a year.
If I could, I'm
going to surgically implant the baseball into my next kid's left hand.
If I could go
in utero.
If I could go back and talk to like 5-year-old Chase, I'd be like, hey, you know, fat butt, get off the couch and go play.
Get to the batting cage right now.
Like, I know some things. Let me help you out.
But you know what, though, with this Trout deal, I mean, people were saying, well, if Harper's going to command over 300, Trout will easily get 4. Mike Trout's one of those guys, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago with the Harper deal. There's very few guys in sports you write a blank check for. You know, LeBron, Tom Brady, we can come up with our list. I got to believe Mike Trout's on that list, though.
What's funny is you know that Trout was just sitting there going, yeah, go ahead, Bryce. I'll let you do this. And you know he had the numbers already close because they're already close to a deal. Mm-hmm. And so we knew he was just – him and his agent were just sitting there going, go ahead, Harper. Get yours, man, because we're going to top you in about 2 weeks.
Now, where does this – who is it, the Angels? Mm-hmm. Where does this put the Angels now with this big contract?
Well, strap for money.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. You've now – which he's probably – I mean, he's probably worth every penny. But now you basically –
they were never going to win anything with him, though.
Well, don't they still have, like, 6 years on Pujols' deal, yeah, like 25 per?
You've handcuffed your team now, and you're – only thing you can say is – we got the highest paid player and the best player, but you can't say anything.
But there's no salary cap in baseball.
Yeah,
and the toughest and a division with Houston, who's a World Series contender every year. Uh-huh. You know, Oakland had a good season last year and bounced back, so that's not an easy division to win. There's not really a lot of space for the wild card with how good the Yankees and the Red Sox
are.
But
if they don't win in the next 3-4 years, they're going to be looking to move him.
He's going to be a Philly in 2 years.
Well,
anyway.
I don't know though, and here's the thing, Trout. Baseball does better than the NBA and the NHL. People don't realize it. It makes more money by double. It's a $9 billion industry.
I'm not saying that as far as the money. I'm just saying winning.
I agree. But why it happens and why it does that, even though we don't pay attention to it as much as the NBA, is because locally baseball crushes it. Like in L.A., the Angels are big. Mike Trout could walk into a bar in Dallas or Atlanta or Nashville and no one would know.
Exactly.
But in L.A., he's huge, right? Like in his
they
market.
Love it.
St. Louis Cardinals, they're huge in St. Louis. Like, they kill – these baseball teams crush it financially, locally.
Well, the local TV deals are just ridiculous.
Right, but they're not big national commodities anymore because baseball's not a national sport anymore. But if you look at – see, like you always say it, Nick, if Mike Trout walked into a bar in Nashville, people wouldn't necessarily know who he is.
No.
And that's really weird to be the highest paid athlete in the history of American team sports.
In a market like Los Angeles.
In a huge market.
Yeah.
And nobody really, you know, if he walked down Broadway, would people be like screaming at him like they would with P.K. Subban?
No.
Probably not. Probably not even close.
One man who just walked into Barrel House, much to our surprise, is Chris Mason. I think if he walked into Barrel House, people would know who he is. He's going to sit down and he's going to join us next here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Guys, nothing looks as good as Chris Mason, except for a smooth, efficient, clean HVAC unit. All that great duct work, it does look better than Chris Mason. I hate to say it, and it'll save you more money. Spring Hill Heating and Cooling is how you do it. Spring Hill Heating and Cooling will take care of your house. They'll come to your house every 6 months. They just did it with my in-laws. They popped by. They called them and said, hey, we're coming over to the house. We're going to check up on all your pipes, make sure all your pipes are clean, make sure everything's running smoothly, make sure there's no problems. Could save you money in the long run. A little checkup every 6 months for your house. Join the Comfort Club from Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. It's only $99. They make sure your house, while we're transitioning into the warm weather, before that AC unit has to work overtime all summer long, you got to make sure your house is running smoothly. So make sure you call Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. SpringHillAC.com is the website. SpringHillAC.com is the website. Tell them Braden sent you. Join the Comfort Club. Make sure your house is running well. It'll save you money, and you'll look better than Chris Mason. SpringHillAC.com is the website. Tell them Braden sent you.
Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The Game, we're live this morning inside of Jack Daniel's Barrel House, Bridgestone Arena, as we welcome in Preds TV color analyst Chris Mason. He's brought to you by Smoky Mountaintop. C-Mace, what's going on? How are you?
Well, we can't hear him.
The constable has not turned on his microphone.
Yeah. No, he did if something happened here.
Yep.
There we go.
There we go.
I'm here.
There
you
go.
Oh, my
God.
I was just in the middle of saying I was fantastic, and I'm doing great, and I'm ready for the big match. So I just regurgitated.
All right. So we'll get to Austin Watson in a little bit. But I want to know what you've seen from Callie Yarncroke, Craig Smith, and Colton Sissons. They hadn't played more than 12 minutes together. Lavi puts them together against the Kings. It works. He puts them together against the Sharks. It works like 8 seconds into the game. What is it about that combination? Certainly Colton is as consistent as it gets. What is it about those three that has worked? And do you think Lavi just rides it out? Do you think it could actually be the second line for this team moving forward, at least this year?
I think right now you definitely have to consider that because, you know, they're in a position where they're things weren't going great and they're looking for that spark. Obviously, you know, they tried splitting up the Joffe line to try to get something going with Granlund and moving those guys around, and nothing really seemed to click, and that was the first one that actually did. So I think as of now, you've got to keep those guys together, playing so good. But they're both, you know, Colton Sissons is up and down the walls, physical. You know, he's nothing fancy, but he's got a little bit of offensive upside, does the right things out there. He's done a good job of getting pucks net. Craig Smith goes hard to the net. He's got that skill. He's got that fire. He's got that speed. And Callie Yarncroke is similar to Sissons in a way. There's, you know, nothing's going to blow you away, but he always does the right things kind of behind the scenes. He doesn't make mistakes. And, you know, when you put those three together, and I think Craig's been playing really good hockey lately. So I think it was nice for him to get with a couple guys that are really predictable and trustworthy.
Preds get 4 out of 6 points on the road. They've now won 4 of their last 6 games, but yet maybe some fans are proceeding with caution, wondering if this team is turning the corner. How big would a sweep this week of Toronto and Pittsburgh in this building go for rebuilding the fan base from top to bottom? Everybody's saying, okay, here we go. This is the run we needed.
It would be huge. This is, you know, quite honestly, you look at the schedule, it's tough. But I really think, you know, given the way things have been going for the Preds, this is exactly what they need in terms of the level of competition, ramping it up for playoffs and getting into these type of games where you go into these games thing. If you don't play your game, you know, Toronto's got a team. They've been up and down lately. But if they got a team, if you have an off night, they're going to pump you. And same with Pittsburgh. So I think it could do a lot. I feel like that San Jose game, the LA, they didn't play great, but they did it the right way. They worked hard and came out with a win. But that San Jose game, to me, was that looked like the team. Now they have to follow that up tonight. I guess win or lose, as long as they look like that, they have that confidence and they're doing the right things. To me, that's the main thing.
Yeah, I like that it's a hard schedule because there's no guesswork about it. Like, you're either going to play well against good teams and feel good going into the postseason, or you're not, and there's no real gray area. We're all going to know together as we watch them play. Austin Watson reinstated by the NHL. Looks like he'll be out for morning skate today. Just in general, certainly it's a depth piece if he were to be back on the roster and playing again at any point. Just let's go through just the hockey side of this. What does it take for a guy who's been away from everybody? Does it take a week of being around the team and then a couple of regular season games so that he's capable of going in the postseason? He certainly has familiarity. What's the process like to be up to speed, and can he do it in a short period of time?
You know, it's obviously it's different for everybody. I think if you look at his last situation where he had the suspension, you know, he was able to skate. And, you know, this time around, he wasn't able to skate. So it's one of those things where game conditioning is tough to get back, especially when you miss a big chunk of the season and things are amplified so much more. The games, you know, it's faster. It's more detailed. There's none of those middle season games that get away from you. So it takes a while, and it is different. He did a good job last time and coming back, and he scored goals right away, and he's that type of player that I don't think it would take too long. But it's definitely going to take some practice, conditioning, and obviously you need games. You need games.
So he's not allowed to skate with the team, obviously. He's not allowed to skate in any official capacity with the team. But is he not allowed to go to, like,
he is
a rink?
Oh, yeah, you mean
like during the in the program, can he not just go to his own rink on his own time and work out and train?
Yeah, I'm sure he was staying in shape. I don't know how much he skated. I haven't, you know, it was the first I heard of it yesterday, too. But so I assume he could if that was part of the, you know, the program and everything, if there was allowances for that, for sure.
Chris Mason is joining us here at Barrel House, Bridgestone Arena. It's Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So Kyle Turris benched the last couple of games. We know Colton Sissons really stepped up. Some second-line scoring and secondary scoring What will it take? Is it as simple as to get Turris going? Is it one goal? Is it a defining moment? How do you get going eventually? Or is it too late at this point?
No, it's not. It's never too late. I think it is one of those moments that can really turn you around. And quite honestly, you know, him being out the last two games, when you're in this season, you're in a slump and you play every second night. It's either a game day or you're preparing for a game. So the night before, and it's always that preparation. And when things aren't going good, you just feel weighed down and it's heavy and it's hard to get out. You know, he had a couple days there, and you know, out in California, and you're not worrying about getting ready for a game. You can just kind of take yourself out of your situation, the slump that's been. And he knows every player. You know, you have your expectation. You're your worst critic. You know, so it's tough. So I think that time off can be really beneficial in terms of, you know, changing the mindset coming in. Now you're hungry. You're not going to healthy scratch a Kyle Turris. I don't know how many times got a player like that's been scratched in his career. So this is another way to try to motivate someone like Kyle.
So I want to – nobody thinks that UC Saros is going to start the postseason as the goaltender. It's Pekka Rinne's team. He's going to start game one, and there's no real discussion there. It doesn't mean that UC Saros hasn't created at least some conversation amongst the coaching staff should Pekka struggle in the postseason, which unfortunately he's been pulled six times in the last three playoff series. What is it now? He's more rested this year. He's started fewer games than he will in the last couple of seasons. Is there something that you've seen out of Pekka in the postseason that is different? Is it just higher? You know, you're playing against the best competition. What is it that you've seen from Pekka in the last few playoff series that is maybe leading to his performance? Is there anything at all you can put your finger on?
Well, I'll tell you what, as a goaltender, you're more often not a product of what's happening in front of you. And I think last postseason in particular, I think, I'll go back to both of them, but last one, the team was very up and down. Pekka was very up and down. It was really an anomaly to me because, especially at home, and I don't know if it was the sense that the Preds had more pressure, you know, anything but a Stanley Cup final was not, you know, we are all kind of, they won the President's Trophy. They went to the final the year before and the way that season was.
I think the city just assumed they were going to, like, wake up and be in the finals. And I don't think Nashville had fully learned how hard it really is to get there.
That's the thing. You look at it, especially you look at this league, there's probably eight teams, I think, could legitimately win the Stanley Cup. Everyone's are automatically giving it to Tampa Bay. But even though in the East, there's a ton of teams. Pittsburgh gets hot. Boston's a good team. Toronto, who knows if they get going. But, you know, and then the West, there's about six teams out in the West that are, I would say, in the same boat as a contender that could win.
As we wrap it up here with Chris Mason, I don't know if you're aware of this. And I know you're aware from the Preds angle. They've won two in a row, four of the last six, playing good hockey. So if things do go awry, the blame is solely on Chase McCabe, because I'm not sure if you're aware. The constable has actually trimmed up the lettuce a little bit.
Yeah, he cut the hair.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You trimmed the flow. That's
amidst the winning streak.
Right after two wins.
Oh, my gosh.
They play their best hockey game in 3 months, and Constable cuts his hair.
He doesn't believe in that stuff, though. Maybe it's because he cut his hair.
Well, no, the game happened before.
Ah.
Derek?
But maybe
he was thinking about cutting his hair.
Maybe he made the appointment.
Exactly. Oh, absolutely.
Yo. Keep your mouth shut.
Absolutely. Made the appointment. There we go.
Oh, give me a break.
Might have to give out a citation. I'm just saying.
Are you guys,
this week goes wrong.
Yeah, let's, Nick, we're blaming Constable here, okay?
I'm not going to
join
blame
the team
constable.
And
no,
blame,
I'm not blaming
let's pile
him
on the Constable.
We know he makes no spelling errors, though, when he sends tweets.
I heard that before. He edits his tweets.
That's Constable.
Listen, this is what we do. We are petty on this show. We pile on. Yeah. That's what we do.
Chase, I'm not going to pile on, man. I'm not.
It's a 15-yard flag if you pile on.
Yeah, you're right.
All right.
Shut up. Keep your mouth shut.
Great stuff as always from Chris Mason, Preds TV color analyst. 90s night tonight, by the way.
Yeah. 90s night. I'm on the desk.
When I say 90s, what comes to mind for you?
Ooh.
Oh, my whole – that was a big decade for me. I had a lot of things happen. Met my wife.
Nice little stretch, right?
Moved away from home, went to play junior, blah, blah, blah. Played, got traded to Nashville. Everything happened.
What music do you think of when you think of the 90s?
Do you think of grunge rock? Yeah, yeah, I was like Pearl Jam, Nirvana. That was my
last great musical revolution this country's ever going to see.
I 100%. I hear.
Yeah, it's a true story, boys.
Another one coming.
All right, there he is.
Dude, Drake is not going to inspire a musical revolution.
Another one's coming.
All right. Would you call him earlier? The Amigos?
Yeah, another one's coming. I'm telling you, another one's coming. Never say never.
That's right.
Never That's right. say never.
All right, great stuff. Chris Mason with us. We appreciate it, C-Mace.
Thanks,
we'll talk to you next week. The Big Finish coming up next. Stay there. All right, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're live this morning from Jack Daniel's Barrel House, Bridgestone Arena, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Before we get to the Morning Drive Daily Rewind, you were just talking about you're having some tire issues.
Yeah, and I've told you about this. I think, what was it, last week? A couple of days ago, I told you about my tire issues.
But are you a guy that can change his own oil, change his own tire if need be?
Look at that man's hands. There's no way he changes his oil.
If I need to, yes.
Because I don't want to, and I can't.
You have soft hands.
If I need to, yes, I can. But, you know, like I told you guys, the tire situation, I know I got to slow leak somewhere. I didn't find any nails in the tire, but
it's leaking.
As soon as I put it in, like a day,
so
it's not premature
leakage.
Yeah,
it's,
it just comes out exactly. So
it's just a mild deflation.
Yeah, I can change it myself.
You got a pill for that?
But those jacks they give you are these flimsy jacks, and I'm not going to try to.
What did I ask you during the commercial break? I said, but do you want to be a real man and change it yourself? And you're like,
I really don't. Can I just take it to the dealership and they'd do it for free.
I've only had to change a tire once, and I did it at a gas station in Franklin down on Highway 96. I was probably in college, maybe high school. I can't remember.
Oh, I do it with them, man.
It was 1999, and it was at a gas station, and I was with a buddy of mine, and I had to change the tire right there in the parking lot.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do sometimes.
Yeah. Now, I've also hit a – I had a small car, and the sidewall blew out while I was driving downtown, and I just drove right past my building and kept on to going to Firestone and got it – like, it held up just enough for me to get to the tire place because I had to buy a whole new tire at that point.
Now, one more thing before we get to the Morning Drive Daily Rewind. I want to take this phone call, not because she's calling in from Alabama, but Dorothy from Alabama is calling in, and the comment says – so hopefully this is correct – she did not listen to this show until now.
What does
that
mean?
Let's find out what this means. Hopefully, it's a good thing. Dorothy, good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I've heard you guys before. I've tuned in a little late. But, yeah, I had a comment. Oh, and you were talking about changing tires. You know, a good thing to do is travel with some Fix-A-Flat, or you can buy a little plug kit. It has this little thing where you can, you know, stick the rubber up in the, you know, if you get a nail hole. And you fix yourself that way.
Thanks, Dorothy.
Thought about that, but yeah, I had a comment on rappers. No one mentioned Kid Rock.
I don't know if he counts. Does he count?
No, because he's a different. He's not hip hop. Definitely not. I mean, he's his. What bracket would he fall into?
I mean, I'll call him in.
Is it rock?
It's rock. I don't know. Yeah. I've always taken
because he has had like a.
He plays
a sort of kind of rap
he
song.
Plays at country bars
downtown
all the time. I don't know. It's a rock show.
So is it rock? Is it country?
I would call it rock and roll.
All right, Bucky, let's get to the Morning Drive Daily Rewind. And Smashville, good morning, and thank you for joining us. It is Morning Drive. We are off and running. Oh, God, it's going to be a crazy 4 hours. All right, 615-737-1025. We'll come back. We'll continue some hoops. Floyd Reese, you name him, he'll join us.
That's Floyd Reed.
Floyd Reed. I got Nas Reed on the brain.
That was a kid.
Not Reed Travis.
That was that kid's name in my third grade English class.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. They should do it old school, man. You know, whoever, you know, spits it into the computer, let it spit back out, take that sheet, put it in the suitcase.
Take that sheet, put it in the suitcase.
Take the sheet, put it in the briefcase, take some handcuffs, wrap it around your wrist, lock that thing, and walk around with it on your wrist. And erase it from the computer. Then you know only one person has it.
Take it offline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then you get La La Land.
Because here's the deal.
Yeah, you got a point.
Oh, good morning, Buck. We welcome in Floyd Reese, former Titans general manager.
Well, I doubt that he's completely done. Now, you know, how extensive they get into it will be up to them. But there's just too many guys out there. Even though the top line guys are probably pretty much gone, there are still guys that you can bring in to supplement and, you know, looking for a guard, looking for a backup lineman, looking for some kind of, you know, depth on your roster. And I think right now they're probably looking at things like that.
That's all but, bumps, man. Biggie yeah. Small.
Is that what it was?
Is there anything? Yeah. Is there anything he did that wasn't good?
Yeah, you got a point there. But that song I did just go so hard.
All time. Is he a one seed in the hip hop
bracket?
64?
Yes.
There's no
Jay-Z. He's in the East bracket.
He's the Duke of the bracket?
Yeah, he's in the East bracket.
How many people are
he
there?
He and Tupac.
How many people don't exist if there's no big? Like, is Jay-Z
right.
a thing? Without,
he is,
without
but I don't know if he's as big as he is now. But he's still a thing.
You probably.
Jay-Z is probably a two seed.
Have you ever put on?
Yeah, Jay's a.
You ever put on a Biggie song and been like, man, that's
yeah,
that's
like
awful.
Man, I hate that song.
Darren, tell sure the people what you texted me.
I can't say this. That.
Yeah, no, you tell the people because I'm gonna bump all day back here. McCabe's trying to sit here and tell me play 90s music.
That was 90s music.
I know it was 90s music. It's my 90s music.
Coming back, we'll get to more of your phone
I'm
calls.
I'm looking on my hip-hop racket over here.
I've been looking at it.
I got 3-6 Mafia. I got Big Pun. We forgot about Puff Daddy. We forgot about everybody.
Yeah, and you actually are really,
yeah,
literally.
Yeah. I've got my oh, seeds going
Jesus.
On over here.
Does Nas have any Quadrant 1 wins?
No, his net ranking is pretty low.
Okay.
Low he has Quadrant wins now.
Yeah, but only
one. Ether? When he went off on Jay-Z, oh, that was
but
big
only,
time.
But only one hot album every 10-year average, though.
So. Okay. 615-737-1025.
That was a low-key stunt.
Stop. Go to break right now. Yes. Right now.
Please.
Buck, I
Buck
try,
doesn't know what we're talking
I,
about.
I try to go to break, and these two just don't let me get there.
I mean,
what
it's
you
not
want
even
to
your
here,
fault. Here. You've got Derek stuffing his face before you go to a commercial break. You've got Braden dropping all kinds of ungodly dad jokes that are just making me squirm in my chair back here. Go to break.
Jokes. Those are Hova quotes.
Stop.
Just play a commercial.
But if somebody gets a hole in one, that's like a life altering event.
Sure.
Like you get drinks, you have to buy. Do you have to buy everybody drinks, or they buy
no.
you?
No.
Well, Buck doesn't do anything for anybody else.
Can you no. tell that the caffeine has kicked in for Buck now?
Exactly.
He's yeah. come to life.
I love that drop.
It's like, so good. It's so good.
Liam Neeson, were you in the movie Exit Wounds?
No.
Wait, Buck, do I get to go to Wu-Tang Clan with you?
No.
When we come back.
Do you watch
back,
CNN?
No.
What about Fox News?
No.
MSNBC?
Do you watch anything that betters yourself?
No.
Have you ever read a book?
No.
Wow.
Oh.
All right, let Nick
shut
go to
up.
Break.
Keep your mouth shut.
Fair still point. Tripping.
Did she, the lady that sent the contraband over to the wall, was she trying to get to a specific person or
sure.
she just randomly just.
Well, no, I'm assuming, no. Like, you've communicated with your person on the inside, uh-huh. says, hey, around midnight on Wednesday, I'll shoot stuff over. Go ahead and grab it real quick and make sure it's not.
If it's midnight, you're in your cell.
I don't know the inner workings of prison. Maybe it's supposed to be at night, so then when in the morning he goes out
oh,
and gets
yeah,
it.
You got a point.
There's
got
to okay. be communication here at yeah. some point.
That's what, you know, the whole Amigos is sort of. You know, for the younger generation now, their Amigos.
Did you just say
that's not
Amigos?
That's not Migos, right?
Migos, yeah.
He their said Amigos. Amigos. See, Buck, even I knew that was
their
wrong.
Their Amigos was
you
it's,
just,
it's like
60%
like Outkast. It's like our Outkast.
Yeah. No, do not compare Migos
no,
to Outkast.
No, no,
what
I'm saying, no, I'm
class.
Not saying like. No, no, I'm not saying as far as
you did call
lyrically
them Amigos.
I'm saying lyrically,
the
they're
Amigos.
Not close to Outkast.
And that was the Morning Drive Daily Rewind. We do it each and every day as part of the Big Finish. Buck, let's keep it moving, and let's get to what we learned today.
Yeah, I wasn't ready for it.
Oh, it's fine. Well, here's what I learned today. I learned this morning that after 13 months of doing the show on day games, or days of the game here at Bridgestone Arena, we were finally hooked up with Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah. And I've learned. I need to pull the mic closer for one. no, but I learned today that, Chase, that you guys blame, you know, if they do indeed lose this game, you're going to blame it on Chase because
yeah.
he got a haircut.
Yeah, like if the Predators were to lose tonight against
yeah,
Toronto and Thursday to Pittsburgh, it's all on the constable.
Yeah, because he cut his hair.
You don't Absolutely. Touch the hair or the beard uh-huh. during a win streak.
Oh, wow. Well, y'all didn't send that memo to Chase, so.
Did not.
Yeah.
It's a bad job. Well, I can't get into my work email, so. That's why I didn't send it. All right, quickly, let's wrap it up, Buck, with what is on tap for tonight.
It's your guide for the happenings around town and what to watch from your couch. Here's what's on tap tonight, now on Morning Drive.
Obviously, the Predators tonight against the Toronto Maple Leafs, but we've got two of the first four play-in games. I'll still call them the play-in games for March Madness. It'll tip off at 5:40 p.m. today with True TV's coverage of Fairleigh Dickinson in Prairie View. And then tonight at 8:10 Central Time, Derek Mason, Coach Rick Bird, and Belmont will take on Fran Dunphy and the Temple Owls.
So, yes, I will be tuning in to that game. Should be a good game. Hopefully, Rick Bird and his team can win in advance and hopefully win another game after that. And then, after that, all bets are off. You know, you move through the tournament the way you should. So,
Belmont, a 3.5-point favorite tonight. Many people believe Belmont can actually win two games. They can beat Temple, and then a lot of people think Maryland's a very flimsy six seed.
Yeah, I think they can possibly win two games, and I don't know. I think Syracuse is in that bracket also.
Close to the microphone with 3 seconds?
No,
three
I am.
Left.
Listen, I am. I'm not putting this thing in my mouth. Okay, I'm telling you that right now. I don't know who else had this thing on their ears. I ain't putting this thing close to my mouth.
Just a little closer.
No, I'm not.
You should sterilize the pre-show. Just blast it with a little Lysol.
Pour some alcohol on it.
There you go.
All right.
All right, that's going to do it for a Tuesday edition of Morning Drive. We'll be back in the studios tomorrow at 6, reacting to the Preds and the Leafs, as well as Belmont, and see if they can continue their quest for a couple of wins in the big dance. Have a great Tuesday. We'll talk to you tomorrow here on Morning Drive.
Bailey, DJ Nashville, I love you.